What's up, everyone? This is Joel Barsky with the Irie Chat Podcast. You were just listening to an awesome song called Better by our guest today, Derek McBride. I like this song so much that I thought it played out in the intro and outro of this episode. Derek is a member of the band Tropidelic, in which we had on the YouTube series. He has been releasing some singles out, and I thought we'd catch up with him just for a chat. Listen to us talk about him first meeting the band, the music he's releasing, and us just getting to know him a little bit better. So enjoy our Irie Chat as we say what's up to Derek McBride. Derek, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, dude. I just made a 10-egg omelet. I rush cooked it right before we did this and demolished the whole thing, so I'm primed, I'm ready.
A 10-egg omelet? Like, you use 10 whole eggs?
Well, omelet is kind of a loose term, so I mixed 10 eggs, a cup of pancake mix, a cup of instant mashed potato mix, mixed it all together real well, and turned into this, like, this fat egg cake that I put shredded Colby cheese over the top and a little bit of salt. It was wonderful.
Dude, I think you created a new food with that. An egg pancake.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, I think you literally created a whole new food. I never heard of something like that, man. You gotta own that. Like, you own that.
That's the Derek cake.
Derek cake, I like that. You're over in Cleveland right now, so how's the whole quarantine situation going on where you're at?
Oh, this has just been the craziest experience of, I think, all of our lives. I can't like claim any ownerships of like, this is really crazy for me, but
yeah.
You know, we were in Vegas as stuff started to look like it was kind of serious. I can remember I always look forward to Vegas because of the buffets. They have one, like, for like $25, like prime rib, steak, all that
nice
stuff.
Damn.
And it was a Wednesday, and I saw a sign that said buffets are going to be closed Friday due to coronavirus concerns. And I thought, man, that's stupid. What the hell?
Yeah.
I kept walking. And as we were driving home, stuff just started shutting down.
Oh, man.
One thing after another. I mean, if I'm being honest with you, I kind of lost it at first. I withdrew all the money out of my account and hid it in three different places. I was like stocking up on food. I have a bug out bag that has 3 days of what you'd need to survive if you're trying to leave the city. But, you know, after like a week or so, I'm kind of getting into the swing of things and, you know, just practicing music, recording some stuff, living my life.
Something that funny I heard about you is you're kind of considered like a beanologist. Like, you know a lot about beans. When I heard about that, I was like, yeah, this is the time needed where people need to know, like, the importance of beans and, you know, food security and stuff like that. So your knowledge right now is needed.
Oh, canned goods are the absolute truth in times like this, you know? They have a massive amount of fiber and protein. And, you know, you could literally live on beans if you needed to. I wouldn't recommend it. Especially if you have, like, you know, people living around you and such, but
yeah.
You know, for 68 cents a can, you know, for me, my day's worth of beans would probably be like 7 or 8 cans.
Oh, wow.
But that's cheap living, you know?
Well, I want to go back to a little bit about when we filmed back in New Orleans. And during our interview, you had mentioned that you met the band at the Trop Town event that they had, which is what they had before they started the Freak Stomp Festival. So you want to share with us a little of that story and how you joined the band?
Okay, so it's pretty wild. I grew up, like right around like 18 or 19, I discovered this place where they have festivals here in Northeast Ohio called Nelson Ledges Quarry Park. And I'd go to festivals there. There was this, you know, spring and fall Badfish, which is, you know, Sublime Tribute Band Festival.
Yeah.
And I'd seen Tropodelic a couple times. I'd go there and I'd just party real hard and have a good time. And eventually one of my friends from my hometown was like, "Hey, you want to go to Trop Town?" I'm like, "Sure."
Mm-hmm.
I went out there and I was getting wasted and stuff at the time. So I'm walking around with like abs. I'm shirtless. I used a Sharpie to make abs on my body. Mm-hmm. And a curly mustache, and just being completely loud and rambunctious. And that was where I first like met everybody in the band. I was camped next to Bobby, who wasn't the guitarist of Tropodelic yet.
Yeah.
Partied with him. James, with his band before Tropodelic, the Jiggly
Glow Pop
Jiggly Jams.
Yeah. I still remember that name. Yeah.
They were there. So I partied with two other guys there that weren't in Tropodelic yet. And, you know, that was basically how, like, the contacts were formed.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, when you guys first mentioned it. But, yeah, I thought that was crazy that all three of you who were not officially in the band kind of met all at that event. I think it was just a one-time event, too.
Just one time.
Yeah, one-time event. Yeah, that's amazing. So you guys are a really hardworking band. And, you know, for those who aren't familiar with Tropodelic, you guys do a lot of stuff and creative stuff to get the crowd riled up. And that's your thing. So you have like stuff like using the Zorb in the crowd, using pogo sticks on stage, and you even come out with different costumes. So how do you all come up with ideas to get your fans all riled up for every show?
All right. So if I were to do some math on the average drive between each show, I would say on average, between 4 and 6 hours between every show. Some of them, you know, sometimes it's a 20-hour drive to the next show.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of time just sitting there joking around that ideas come out. And, you know, I think anybody that knows the band knows that I come from kind of an arena of humor. Mm-hmm. I really like to make people laugh and be outlandish. So a lot of different stuff has been born just by chopping it up with people on the bus. You know, one thing there isn't many records of this one, but my favorite of all the crazy stuff we've done was I'd always wanted to release doves on stage.
That's pretty cool, man.
Wait, I look up, I find out doves are like, you know, 40 or 50 bucks a pop.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, what's equitable to a dove? And I found a guy out in the country selling homing pigeons for $5 a piece, and I got some white ones.
Yeah.
So we played Nelson Ledges, and once again, just completely absurd. It was like the year anniversary of when Harambe was shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the gorilla, the meme, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So James dedicated our set to Harambe, and I came out shirtless in a gorilla mask and just released two doves from under each breast, and they just went flying.
Oh, man, that sounds awesome.
Flying over the crowd.
Oh, but man.
What's really funny about that is if you think about it, I did not buy the pigeons. I rented them.
Yeah.
Because they're homing pigeons. They just flew home.
Yeah, you gave them back.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen you all perform live when I was at the House of Blues when I interviewed you guys. And I've seen your performances like on video, like on the YouTube channel. And I noticed you and James, you guys are like the really biggest dancers of the group. And you guys are always like in sync. So do you guys practice with each other? Like you're dancing before stage, or is it all just natural between you two?
So some of the songs that have actual breakdowns, like we do choreograph things, but that like that signature back and forth thing that we do on most fast-paced songs actually happened organically. Like it started happening, and then, you know, just like one day after a show, I was like, "Yeah, you know, that's it. You want to keep doing that?" It's like, "Yeah." So now that's just kind of the thing, that rock back and forth, skip, jump, whatever you want to call it.
No, you guys got some sick dance moves. Like, and this is just between you and James alone. And I kind of noticed you're more of the bigger dancer. But yeah, you guys are pretty good dancers.
Thank you.
Well, you mainly play the trumpet for the band, but you've obviously dived into other instruments as well. So what else do you play?
Okay. So I'll give you like the chronological order of how things start. I started in sixth grade on the tuba. My instrument of choice, like my main like bass instrument, is actually tuba. And then a little later on in middle school, I learned guitar. I've been playing guitar since middle school.
Mm-hmm.
After that, in high school, I got into bass. In high school, I was really into like old school funk and like old school Red Hot Chili Peppers, like the thump slap stuff. For Tropodelic, I literally learned trumpet for Tropodelic.
Hmm.
It's very similar to tuba, just a much smaller apparatus to blow through.
Yeah.
And you know, for parts that call for it, like on albums and stuff, I'll do some melodica, which,
okay,
if you don't know what that is, that's that little piano thing that you blow through that kind of sounds like a one note harmonica.
Yeah.
And then recently I've dived into the bluegrass world of like banjo and mandolin. Mm-hmm.
I had Ian Young on one of my previous episodes, and you know, he's really popular for the melodica and stuff like that, and he was like even playing it. So if anyone wanted to listen to the previous podcast, like, you could hear, that's a unique instrument to play.
It is.
We mentioned it too before when I met you all in New Orleans. We were talking a little bit about the McRib sandwich, and there's videos on there on the YouTube channel of Tropodelic that you talk a lot about the McRib sandwich. So got me thinking, if other chain restaurants started making their own version of the McRib, which one do you think would make the best?
I am entirely loyal to Arby's. I'm an Arby's man. They have the meats. Yeah. Me and Pags, our bass player, we like to get a meat mountain from time to time, which is a sandwich that contains one serving of every single meat that Arby's has to offer. I get mine on wheat because I'm the healthier one.
Yeah, but you got to get it on wheat, man. All that stuff, you got to get it on wheat at least. You know, Arby's is a good choice. I didn't think about that, but yeah, they would rock if they had their own McRib sandwich.
I want to give a disclaimer here. I don't like the McRib at all. I think it's the grossest sandwich ever. But it literally started, so we hand out our little Spotify cards to people as they're leaving shows.
Uh-huh.
And it's grueling. Sometimes a crowd doesn't remember who you are. They just want to leave. They just look at you and don't take it or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just started, you know, normally it would be like, hey, we were the second band. Check us out online. And I just start saying,
mm-hmm,
you know, stuff that doesn't make sense as I'm hitting it, like, hey, the McRib is back and stuff like that. And they're actually more likely to grab the card because it catches them by surprise.
That's a great marketing strategy, man. I think I mean, I remember like when I came out of the concert or the show that you all opened up for Steel Pulse and you guys were all handing out, you know, the cards. And this was like around midnight it was really, and you guys were still hustling to, instead of like resting and it is your first time in New Orleans all performing, and you guys were like just waiting in the crowd, all of you, like just handing out cards. But yeah, you guys are hard at work.
Thank you.
During our interview when we were filming, you mentioned that people were throwing money to you while performing, and I noticed on the band's vlogs there's fans actually throwing dollar bills at you as well. Is that normal for fans to have that type of interaction with you?
The persona that has kind of arisen was started, I don't know, maybe like 2014. One day I thought it would be funny,
mm-hmm,
to come out in, I don't know if you've seen the movie Borat.
Yeah.
With that swimsuit that Borat wears.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really funny. And I'm the kind of guy, if it gets that reaction, I'm probably going to do it again. And, you know, so, for like 2 years at the end of every set, I was coming out in this mankini thing. And then, you know, it was like, I don't know if you've ever, if you're a fan of SpongeBob, there's like the ripped pants episode where he just does it over and over and over. And it's funny. It gets less funny. Like eventually one day I look down and I'm like, oh, what am I doing? You know?
Yeah.
And now, I think even if I never do it again and I continue playing, there will still be people throwing dollars and yelling obscenities at me. And I accept that. It's funny.
Well, that's a side hustle right there alone, man. That's the vlogs. I think on the vlog itself, you're not even doing anything. You're not dancing. You're just, you know, performing. You're playing the trumpet.
Yeah.
I do a lot of the filming, editing and stuff for the YouTube series. And I noticed when I was video editing everything during our interview, there was one scene or one part that you actually put a chicken wing in your pocket. And that, if people haven't seen that's actually shown on the YouTube like video. If you haven't seen it, it's actually there on the YouTube videos. It's showing. And there was one interview that I heard, I think it was James and Rhodes was on Feeling Good with Duddy B, and I heard that you're a strong believer in using your pockets as napkins. Do you normally store leftovers in your pants? Because that's a pretty good idea to I mean, it's what? Nice to have like a chicken wing in your pocket every once in a while if you need a snack or something.
I mean, the real mastermind of that operation is Napoleon Dynamite. You know, the tater tots.
Oh, he started a trend there.
But yeah. I mean, even in high school, I actually ran into, I went to say what's up to my old band director like last year. Mm-hmm. And I saw an old teacher and I'd forgotten this. She had heard crinkling in my pocket. It was, Derek, what's in your pocket?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wearing cargo shorts and I pulled an Arby's beef and cheddar out of my pocket. She was like, you can throw that away or you can go to the office. And I shoved the whole thing in my mouth.
She sent me to the office. Yeah. Arby's whole sandwich? No, you don't throw that away, man. You got to eat it. Even if it's one whole bite, dude, you got to choke it down or something.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, also like with the napkin pockets thing, I mean, if you don't have a napkin, where else is good? You can't, the outside of your pants, that's going to leave a grease mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you lick your fingers, everyone around you is going to yell at you not to touch anything after that, especially now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can nonchalantly, you know, my bandmates happen to notice me doing this, but, you know, I was going undetected for years when my hands were dirty, just sticking them in my pockets and wiggling them around a little bit.
Dude, I think I think stuff that the knowledge you have right now is best practices to use in this quarantine time, man. Just using your pockets as the wipe down stuff, the whole beanology, your knowledge of beans, man. You have a lot of knowledge that you can share with us that could help people in this quarantine times.
I've been training for this for years.
Yeah, you're prepared for this moment. You started coming out with your music on your own. You came out with a song last year, and you came out another song this year, and you're coming out with a song tomorrow. So what made you want to start music independently from the band?
Well, you know, there's always something to consider. So Tropodelic has a very, you know, like a trademark sound. And I've been writing music for a while now, and some of it doesn't really line up with that. And I just like the idea of putting out, you know, a very, very personal message. Like everything I'm putting out is, it's kind of niche in a way because it's literally like telling stories of, you know, my life specifically.
So for those that don't know you, you've been playing music, you know, obviously way before you joined the band. So are these songs that you've been saving to release for a while, or was it just spontaneous that you just need to release these songs out now?
The two that have been released already have, you know, been written for years. Mm-hmm. Road Back Home, I actually started writing that in like 2013 before I even got sober. And then Through Fire, that was maybe around like maybe 3 or 4 months after I got sober and I was in a sober house. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of free time, and that's when I started writing that one.
The music you've been releasing is more of a folk sound, which is a little different from Tropodelic style. You mentioned the Tropodelic has their own unique sound. So have you always gravitated towards that music genre?
No, not at all. If I want to give somebody credit for that, I will give it to our singer, Matt Rhodes. Mm-hmm. Right when we started touring. So like I was saying, in high school, I've been this funk guy. I've always been about like Parliament, Funkadelic, and Sly and the Family Stone, and Stevie Wonder and stuff. Mm-hmm. And me and Rhodes are the early risers. So we always share a shift in the morning when we're driving.
Okay.
And whoever's driving gets to pick the music, and he would turn on this bluegrass and old country and stuff. And I actually like used to really make fun of him for it.
Mm-hmm.
And really talk a lot of crap about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know when it set in. Maybe it was like around our first trip out west. Some Merle Haggard playing while we're driving just like through mountainous desert. Mm-hmm. And something clicked and I was like, I love this and I'm about this now.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to it since.
So who are some folk musicians you like to listen to?
Right now I'm listening to a lot of Billy Strings, Trampled by Turtles, the Dead South. The cool thing, the Dead South, we actually played in Charlotte, and it was like this double venue.
Mm-hmm.
And right after our set time was their set time on the other side of the venue. So I got to like kind of go through the middle and sneak in through the back and watch them, and they shredded it live. And then, you know, some of the older stuff like Merle Haggard, Hank Williams, Johnny Cash. Really depends on the day.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, has anybody in the band been helping you on making your own singles or the music that you've been coming out with?
So I definitely have bounced things off of all of them, you know, because I've said before, you know, like Tropodelic, it is so absolutely easy to just be like proud of that sound and proud of how it's going. We've got six dudes all putting their all into it, coming from different backgrounds and different genres. But like I'm just writing songs and going in there and recording them. So when I come out, it's a pretty vulnerable spot to be in. Like, is this good? Is this corny? Does this sound all right? So I'm constantly sending all the guys stuff for their takes on it. And, you know, Rhodes normally has some pretty good feedback. James has been super supportive. So has Rex. I actually have one. I haven't even told you about this yet. Not sure when I'm going to drop it, but I have one that is, it's like an acoustic-y, like kind of country sounding guitar part with an old school hip hop beat.
Nice.
That I have James and then, Ryan Toby rapping on with me doing the chorus. So that'll be cool. I have something with both me and James on it coming up, but yeah. Yeah, I bounce almost everything past all of them and get some feedback.
No, that's good. I mean, you guys are a big band. You're a six-piece band, and it seems like you all have kind of like different backgrounds or interests in music, whether it's like hip-hop or heavy metal, stuff like that, or different ranges of genre. But yeah, it's nice that you have that support of, you know, everyone. And I didn't really realize how big your band was until I did the interview with you guys. And I was like, I can interview these guys. It's group. And I was like, damn, that's a lot of you guys. But no, it was fun, man. I enjoyed it. One question I didn't get a chance to ask you guys when I did the previous interview, which you were talking a little bit about, was your sobriety. So I know now you're pushing a few years of being sober. What made you want to make that change in your life?
I wouldn't even say that it was a decision I made. It was like a crossroads that I kind of fell onto the right side of. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, like I'd been to like 7 or 8 different treatment centers. Like I had a very serious drug problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after several tries, eventually the pain became great enough. You know, my existence had become just basically a burden to everyone around me. Hmm. And, just despair. And I, you know, took some guidance from some guys around me that knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I'm here. I don't know how to really explain it.
And you're pushing what, 3 years now or 4 years?
I'm actually September 18th coming up. God willing, I'll have 7 years.
Oh, congrats, man. That's really good for you.
Yeah, it's pretty. I never planned it. If you had met me before sobriety, I was what the experts call like cold and bold. Hmm. Which is like I was super loud and open about my insane drug use and partying. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty good at making something absolutely devastating look fun. Hmm. You know, so like if you could just teleport from then to now and you'd meet me, you'd be like, oh my God, who is this guy?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Hmm. Derek, we're at a recurring segment in this podcast that I call Life Lessons. So this question is, share us a lesson that you learned either through a good or a bad experience in your past, and tell us the story behind that lesson.
Okay. Life lesson that I have learned basically through the majority of the things I've accomplished is that what I think and how I feel about a situation does not have to be relevant to what I'm actually doing. Hmm. And what I mean by that is, say, for example, school. I while touring and working a part-time job, I got my bachelor's degree at Cleveland State University. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it the whole time. Most things that are work that require a lot of effort, there comes a point where internally, mm-hmm, I'm like, I think this is stupid and I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, I thought that because I thought it was stupid and I didn't want to do it meant that I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. What I've learned today is that oftentimes, if it's something that I know needs done, if I just dive into it and do it regardless of how I feel and what I think about it, I'm massively relieved when I'm on the other side.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling of accomplishment and I've done, you know, basically like what a grown adult needs to do, whatever that situation may be.
It's part of being an adult. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I realized too. It's part of being an adult. You do things that you don't want to do, but sometimes you have to do it. That's the adult thing to do. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. But before we wrap up, is there anything you want to share with our listeners?
I just wanted to say stay safe out there. I am rooting for everybody to make it through this well. And you know, my love goes out to you.
Thank you, man. Same from here to you. This has been a great IRE chat, man. Thank you so much. And it was good to reunite with you from, you know, hanging out with the band in New Orleans. And Derek, man, this has been a great IRE chat, man. Give my love to the guys of Tropidelic. But Derek, thank you so much for joining us on IRE chat, man. And best of luck on everything.
Thanks, man.
Our IRE chat with Derek McBride. Make sure to follow him on all his socials, which you may find in the episode notes. Please rate our podcast and let us know what you think of it. I hope you stay safe under quarantine. If you need to keep yourself occupied, go ahead and catch our other interviews. Thank you for listening to our Irie Chat, and I'll see you soon.
I'll play my